Yeah, you say, now this one makes sense. This one is not counterintuitive, as some of the assertions seem to be, that overwork and the epidemic of overwork in this country reduces employment as fewer people are hired and then required to work longer hours or are hired for poor part-time jobs without benefits. So why don't you elaborate on that?
I think this is certainly true that we've had these kind of downsizing things where, you know, you lay off thousands, and those who are left on get forced to work higher and higher levels of mandatory overtime, are stressed to the max. Often during recessions, we find that mandatory overtime actually goes up. We lay a certain segment of people off, and we force others to work longer. And we do this because of the whole benefits thing, that it's cheaper to pay time and a half than to hire another person and pay benefits. And overtime was originally, time and a half was originally supposed to discourage you from using overtime. It doesn't do that anymore, and so we need to think about why that's not working. It's not having the same kind of impact. So companies will do it. In addition, now here's another issue: the administration is talking about actually making it harder for workers to get the time and a half, and classifying more people as management and other kinds of things, so they don't even get the time and a half, and you can make them work any kinds of hours,
including many government workers, thanks to the Homeland Security Act.
Yes, and we are, again, we're the only country in the world, in the modern industrial world, that has no restrictions on the amount of hours that you can make people work as long as you pay them. State of California has a limit of 72 hours a week, but it's the only body in the U.S. that has any kind of limit at all. You take Europe, I mean, you can make people work long. You know, in Maine they had a situation where a guy had been working 96 hours. He was a lineman, and he forgot to put on a glove, and he touched the high voltage power line, and he got killed. And as a result of this, Maine got all upset, and so they actually passed a law. But the law in Maine says that you can only make people work 80 hours of overtime in 2 weeks, or additional 40 hours of overtime a week. I mean, this is like, but at least Maine, they talked about it. Most states, there's no policy whatsoever. Meanwhile, in Western Europe, the European Union has a law that says you can't force people to work more than 48 hours, even if you pay them overtime.
You know, there's a notion of disposability in our culture. You know, the junk food we drive through.
Junk people, too, yeah.
And that's what I'm asking you. Is that disposable mentality now extend to human life?
Well, I think so. If you're going to wear people out and burn people out and then cast them aside because you assume that there's always some younger, hungrier people to come up after them. I mean, these are elements in my mind of basic civilization that we learned a long time ago, and we're suddenly forgetting and casting aside, all in the name of some kind of globalization and global economy. But you know, globalization doesn't necessarily have to mean a race to the bottom. It could, as the Western Europeans are showing in the European Union, lead to us adopting the best practices in countries instead of the worst.
A rising tide lifts all boats, right? The co-author of your book, Affluenza, The All-Consuming Epidemic, David Wan, said, "I regard discomfort as our most valuable catalyst for change, and I think evolution backs me up. When a given path becomes painful, we'll take another." Do you think that's what it's going to take, a crash to get Americans to wake up?
Well, I hope that this path of endless overwork what we're suffering from that is eventually going to become painful enough that we think, isn't there a better way to do this?
But that's happening, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. You know, you do wonder why we are so alone and why in some ways we pride ourselves for being so different from everybody else, when the differences in many ways are differences we all suffer from rather than, you know, benefit from.
Let me move to something that's a little more hopeful. How do children respond to the themes you investigate through your programs?
Well, I think children often in many surveys that are done talk about how it would be important for them to have more time with their parents, which is increasingly difficult. I mean, the number of people who have family meals together, family dinner together, has declined tremendously. The number of people who take any kind of family vacation together has declined tremendously since the 1960s. Parents do in some ways have time for kids, but now kids' lives have become like ours. You have six-year-olds who have appointment calendars. I mean, these are kids that we're making follow our pattern. So we've got them so scheduled up in one activity after another, all with the idea that we're going to somehow increase their productivity, make them get into a better college or something like that. This is taking a huge toll on kids. Psychologists know it. They warn us about it, and yet the problem gets worse. I think kids are suffering from all of this as much as we are, and there are schools now that in this rush to produce these people who work all the time have eliminated recess. Whole districts, the city of Atlanta eliminated recess in its elementary schools so it could make kids more productive. I mean, what is this about? What are we trying to achieve with this? We say, it's the economy needs this. This is what the Wall Street Journal said, they had an article titled "Shorter Hours Threaten European Economies," and they said, the Europeans, they work 350 hours less than we do, and they have what they call, they look for what they call the balanced life, and they just don't realize that the balanced life isn't good for the economy. It makes them less competitive in the age of globalization and so forth. Well, my response to this is, I mean, why don't we ask the question, what's an economy for anyway? If an economy isn't to give us a balanced life, if it isn't to make more happiness for the majority of people, what is an economy for? An economy is for us just to work ourselves to death in pursuit of this thing, the gross domestic product, which certainly has gotten doubly gross in the last 30 years or so. But is this what it's about, or is it about, in fact, having a more humane, civilized life? The Europeans asked that question. They may not all, I mean, they're not societies that don't have any problems, and I'm not trying to paint them as utopias, but at least they asked that question and they try to do something about it.
Unlike this country, where the Girl Scouts recently introduced a stress-free merit badge for Girl Scouts.
Yeah, but of course, that's a tough thing for in when they've got so many things and have to go from this activity to that activity to this activity. And
so tell us about October 24th, your vision of how maybe different organizations can endorse it, can get involved, and help people take the day off.
Well, we hope that there'll be events around the country where we're counting on maybe as many as 200 teach-ins in universities about this, where people will come together and hear from a variety of speakers and discuss these issues and talk about what to do about them. We hope that labor unions in their halls will sponsor these things, that churches will sponsor events, and that local organizations will come together, whether it's the Sierra Club or the labor union or the church or the family organizations, and in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, family organizations are kind of leading the charge and starting to build Take Back Your Time Day. But these groups will come together and they'll share the information about what they're doing and things, and they'll talk about the issue of time, and they will create in each community around the country Time Day committees or Take Back Your Time committees, which can begin to work and try to figure out and build for personal, workplace, and political solutions to this problem over the years to come. We don't. We think the Take Back Your Time Day starts on October 24th, but it certainly, we hope, won't end there. It certainly will be the basis, the catalyst for activities around these issues. We hope that October 24th, say 2004, might be a day in which we really press every congressional and presidential candidate in the election, which will be coming up 2 weeks later, to talk about this issue. They don't have to agree with us necessarily. I mean, that's not, we know a lot of them won't, but we think it at least ought to be on the political agenda. It ought to be talked about. They have to address something that is affecting at least half of all Americans.
It would be very interesting to see what a politician's take on this would be.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Gore would be a good example. I mean, instinctively he gets it. There's just no question in my mind that Al Gore gets this and what a problem it is. Robert Reich, another one who's written about this, the former Secretary of Labor. Some Republican conservatives, family values people that we've talked to certainly get that this is a problem. But, you know, how much they're willing to say or do, given where their money and their funding of their campaigns comes from, you know, I guess we'll have to do a better job to convince business that it's in their interest as well. Ultimately, I think it is in business's interest. In the very short run, and unfortunately business in the U.S. thinks in terms of the next quarterly report, it may not be. But ultimately, I think in the long run, business that has a happier, more rested workforce is you know, going to be more stable and more effective. I often wonder what would happen, for example, if Airbus, our Boeing's leading competitor, were to run full-page ads in the New York Times that says, whose planes would you feel safer flying on? Those made by French workers who have a 35-hour work week, who get 6 weeks of vacation a year, who rarely suffer from stress and burnout, who have long meals with their families and a family life, and live a balanced life, or made by Boeing workers who consistently are being forced to work mandatory overtime, have had I don't know how many strikes in the last 10 years over just that issue, who have managers who call us at times and tell us how burnt out they are. You know, whose plane are you going to feel safer on?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question, but I'm going to give you one more question, and that is, what kind of work week do you have?
A longer one this year than I have in previous years. And, I jokingly say, at least that this year, I'm kind of a case study in what I criticize. The fact of the matter is that Take Back Your Time Day is becoming Take All My Time Day, and I'm putting a lot of time into it. I think it's very necessary, and I believe in it. But longer vacations. Well, I kind of make up for it in that.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that since I know your wife, too. Well, I was thinking of having a little event here on October 24th, but you know what? I'm just going to take the day off.
All right. Whatever you choose.
Thanks for being on the program, and I wish you much success with the new project.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope people will join in with this event, and I hope they'll remember that there's no present like the time. Thanks.
TimeDay.org is the website. John DeGraff, PBS documentary filmmaker and interim coordinator of the Take Back Your Time Day initiative, October 24th.